Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We are live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. So as we kick off this show, is there anything you want to say to those Nikola Mirotic fans out there, Matt?
Yeah, whoop-de-friggin-do. He's played well for three games. We've also seen him play very inconsistently and at many times poorly for three seasons. So I really don't know. It's funny. It's like on Twitter, as you know, I was watching this Bulls-Celtics game last night. It seemed like out of nowhere, a bunch of Bulls fans on Twitter just kind of flip-flopped or came out of the woodwork after hiding, and all of a sudden there were Nico defenders everywhere. I was like, has all of Bulls Nation gone mad? Have we forgotten how frustrating this guy has been? Because anytime he gives us a good game or a stretch of good games, he follows it up with duds and head-shaking pump fakes and terrible basketball. Look, I'm happy for Nico that he is enjoying his comeback and he's played well in three games. And just so happens that the Bulls have won those three games. But does Nico coming back and the Bulls winning all of the games since his return mean anything in the grand scheme to me? No. I think it's a small sample size. It's a coincidence. And until Nico puts together a string of games like this for, I don't know, 20, at least 15, no, I still have the same opinion of Nico, which is that the Bulls have overvalued him from the start. Now, that being said, if he does go up, continue on this positive trend and show himself to be a useful player, perhaps a rotational bench piece for a contender and next spring's playoffs, upping his trade value at the deadline, good, great, grand, wonderful. That's all I have to say about it. I do not care about this three-game stretch other than, hey, if it ups his trade value and the Bulls can actually get something for Nico in February, do it. Great.
So before we like jump into everything here too, because I want to get back to your point there, but what we're going to do on the show today, talk a little bit about this winning streak the Bulls are on and how they played against the Celtics last night. Talk a little bit about what Nikola Mirotic has done since he returned, and I want to dive a little bit deeper into some stats to kind of back up some of these points that we're making here as well. And also to kind of get just a conversation out there about what happens if the Bulls continue to win games in December. So all of that, we're going to have This Week in Bulls History 2 coming up, as well as I want to talk about maybe a player that's on the waiver wire that I think the Bulls should definitely try and go get, but it might cause some problems in terms of who they should cut, who should they get rid of in order to get this guy. So all of that and more today on Locked On Bulls. But so let's jump right into that. So the Bulls three-game winning streak coming out against the Celtics. It was known before even the game started that one of the best players in basketball wasn't playing, and that's Kyrie Irving. So they also played without guys like Marcus Morris. And also to the Celtics credit, this is like probably one of the worst games that they've had in terms of the season. They couldn't knock down a shot, and the Bulls were knocking down shots left and right. But three-game winning streak, I think what we talked about last week, this is important for the Bulls. In terms of just confidence boost and sort of a morale boost for the Bulls, but at the same time, I think if this starts to continue, where the Bulls start to win more games than they probably should, maybe the Garpax in the front office need to take a look and start moving guys.
Look, I mean, I'm still for the Bulls trying to make some moves before the deadline if it helps them out next season, whether that's, you know, getting a valuable piece for trading Robin Lopez, although, you know, now he has become so valuable and Cristiano Felicio has become so useless that I worry about that. But even still, I mean, if it benefits them moving forward, obviously do that. If they can take on a bad contract and get an asset along with that, they absolutely should. But if Bulls fans are starting to panic because they've seen three wins in a row and are thinking, oh gosh, maybe we were too good, maybe the tank isn't going to work, what, you know, what about when Zach LaVine comes back, we're going to start winning a whole bunch of, I mean, come on, guys, take it easy. This team is still bad, and this team is still going to lose a hell of a whole lot more than they win. Yeah, it's a three-game winning streak, but let me remind you that the Celtics were on the road in the second night of a back-to-back without Kyrie Irving. To me, that right there scratches this win against Boston as anything other than circumstantial. I don't buy it as anything beyond that. The Celtics shot terribly, 10 of 40 from downtown. Yeah, the Bulls got a good game from Nico again. They got a great game from Bobby Portis, 23 points off the bench. Good for them. The Bulls seized the opportunity to beat a tired, road-weary team without their best player. Kudos. Should that leap us into a panicked state of, oh God, the Bulls are going to win too many games? No, please, children, take a few deep breaths and a chill pill and look forward to the next Bulls loss because it's coming.
I mean, I'm with you there too, but I think it's at least worth noting the fact that, you know, if Nico and Bobby and some of these other pieces, Chris Dunn, some of these other guys continue to play well and continue to play with confidence, it is a valid question mark. And I'm not saying that it is going to happen, that the Bulls are all of a sudden going to go on this mad win streak and we're going to be looking at a team that's trying to budge their way, you know, into a playoff spot. We're not saying that at all. And that shouldn't be the goal here. I mean, this team was constructed to lose this year, right? I think we could all be in agreement that this team was built to try to get as many lottery ping pong balls as they can. And that's fine. And I think a lot of people understood that. Maybe outside the players, who obviously they want to go out there, win every night. They don't want to go out and get their heads bashed in every single night. But from a fan standpoint, that's what we want here. And you know what? To give Bobby and Nico some credit here, I have to give Nico and Bobby both some credit over these three games. The way that they've handled themselves, the way that they've handled themselves on the court, just in this three-game stretch, coming back and playing together, is a hell of a lot different than I thought it was going to be. And I was mad wrong about the way that they were going to be able to handle it, the way they were going to play, how things were going to turn out here. It's turned out in the best possible situation. Now, this is only a three-game stretch. I get it. It's only three games, and there's still a lot of basketball left to be played. But in terms of being a Bulls fan, and for the Bulls front office, this is working out in their favor, and this is what we hoped for.
Yeah, I have to imagine that John Paxson and Gar Forman are kind of, you know, wiping some sweat off of their brows right now. And, you know, as we've said, three-game sample size, so let's all temper our excitement about Nico maybe actually having some trade value after all. But as far as the feud, and Bobby Portis was asked about this and addressed it after the win against Boston and said, look, that's in the past. We're all moving forward. You know, Nico and I are happy to be playing. We're, you know, we want to be there for our teammates. We're happy that we've been playing well recently, and we're just trying to scrape together some wins. And he and Nico both seem like they are ready to move past this because they both know that it's in their best interests to move past this. That said, I mean, like, there is no way that the Bulls front office had any confidence that this would be resolved the way it looks like it's resolving itself. Because just a couple of weeks ago, there was an ultimatum on the table from Nico's camp saying, either trade me or trade him, because I don't ever want to step on a court with that guy again wearing the same colored jersey. So you have to imagine that there's still some of that in the back of their minds.
Yeah, and so to talk about a little bit about Nico in terms of whether, you know, whether he's going to continue to play this well going throughout the season now, I hope he does. Like, I'm not rooting against Nico in any capacity, because if I'm rooting against Nico, then I'm rooting against the Bulls, and that's not what I'm trying to do here. And I want Nico to play well. And for those who may not like him, maybe you're like Matt and have seen enough of him, you know, him playing well for this month's stretch we'll be good enough to get him somewhere. We'll be good enough to get him trade value at some point, somewhere. And whatever you can get for him, that's fantastic. That's what they should be doing. You're trying to collect assets, not wins here. And so that brings me to my point, too. It's like, if you can get both of these guys to work well, which over the three games, credit to Fred Hoiberg too. Credit to him too. You've gotten Bobby Portis and Nico Mirotic on the floor, had their best night. Both guys had their best night. Bobby Portis scored his career high in points last night. The guys are combined plus 52 in plus minus over this three game stretch, and they've scored 31% of the Bulls' points. So I got to give them a little bit of credit here in terms of their play on the floor, the way that they're conducting themselves. And really, I got to give some credit to Fred Hoiberg too, because this could have went in a different scenario. And I'm not saying that it's not going to, maybe a week, 2 weeks, a month from now, but in terms of value and what we want to see over the next course of the month, I want to see Nico to continue to play well, and I'll eat my words on everything in the next month. If he continues to play at a peak levels, then I'll eat my words on Nico Mirotic and I'll say I was flat out wrong. But until then, you know, I'm taking it for what it is. It's a small sample size, three games. So, but credit to Bobby, credit to Nico for playing well, credit to this team to picking up some wins after a brutal stretch of 10 losses in a row, and one that they couldn't close out in Indiana and were embarrassed last week. So picking it up here in this win streak, you know, it's at least good for their confidence, but I don't want to see the Bulls win any more games.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think you need to worry about that. We've seen plenty of teams that end up with the league's worst record go on little mini winning streaks over the course of an 82-game season. It happens. I'm not worried about that. And if you want to give Nico some credit, if you want to give Bobby some credit, their head coach Fred, for getting all this together, yeah, those two have played well. Puncher and Punchy seem to be getting along. They led the Bulls dominantly, combining for 47 in the win over the Celtics. Cool. But as far as the long-term project, I mean, do I want the Bulls to pick up that team option and pay Nico another $12.5 million next year? Hell no. With Nico, it's a fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me thing. And any Bulls fan out there who believes that this guy is still worth holding on to, come on. Open your eyes. Do not be fooled by a three-game stretch where he's come back and shot the ball well. If it ends up being something that increases his trade value and the Bulls are able to move him and get a valuable piece to help the rebuild moving forward, great. But do not for a second think that Nico is a piece worth holding on to for the long term in Chicago. Absolutely not.
My question to Nico Mirotic fans, or people who do like Nico Mirotic, my question to them is, if you want him to stay in a Bulls uniform beyond just this year, if you don't want him to be traded, if you think he's going to be a piece for whatever you think the Bulls rebuild is, if you think that's going to be a valuable piece that the Bulls can have, I don't understand where that's going to get you in terms of that much closer to a championship. Because if he's still here, he's still helping you win games. You're competing yourself right out of the lottery, basically. When you're winning games, you're putting productive product on the floor. And like I said, go back to this point. This team was assembled to lose this year. It was about development of the young players and not to put W's on the board. And so that's my biggest point here, is like, if the Bulls front office continues to see this team start picking up wins in December, where they probably shouldn't, just for the mere fact that you want to be in the lottery, you've got to start thinking about moving some of these guys. I mean, I'm talking about Robin Lopez, Bobby Portis, Nico when he can get traded at January 15th. I mean, you really have to seriously sit down and consider your options. I'm still holding on to that factor. If the Bulls roster stays exactly how it is right now and Zach LaVine returns, honestly don't think they're going to be the worst team in the league. Like, if we were going to end the season right now in April with the exact same roster we've got right now, I don't think the Bulls are the worst team in the league. And that's bad for a team that
you also have to keep in mind that lottery odds with the worst record in the league doesn't mean they're going to get the number one pick. The Bulls could finish with the second or third worst record and get lucky and come out on top with the number one overall pick. That's certainly possible. It's happened countless times,
right?
Especially in recent years, it's happened a lot. So that is something to think about. And also, again, the Bulls still, as we are recording this on Tuesday, are tied for the worst record in the NBA with Atlanta. Even despite this three-game little winning streak they put together, they are still tied for the worst record in the league. They are going to lose lots of games. Again, Boston, second night of a back-to-back, no Kyrie Irving. How often are they going to get that lucky as far as you know, what their opponent is working with when the Bulls face them on any given night. I think it's an oddity. I don't think it's something Bulls fans should worry themselves about. Before we do get to our second segment, looking back this week in Bulls history, Jordan, I did want to give a little bit of praise to some guy, to somebody we've definitely ragged on Locked On Bulls, a guy who lost his job in the starting rotation, and that is Jerin Grant. He has certainly had his struggles this season. I think all Bulls fans can agree at this point that Chris Dunn is the better, more exciting point guard for this future rebuild we have on our hands. But in his last two games off the bench, Jerin Grant has played very well. Last night against Boston, 23 minutes, scored 8 points, dished out 9 assists, added 2 steals, only turned the ball over once. And their win against the Knicks, 9 more assists and 0 turnovers. He's got 18 dimes to 1 turnover in his last 2 games off the bench. And for a guy that we weren't sure if he could even run the offense of the second unit when he lost his starting job, a nice little stretch here from Jerin Grant, because the story of that game against Boston, the Celtics were shorthanded. The Bulls bench outscored the Celtics bench 55-30. So that's a 25-point difference, and the Bulls win this game by 23. I mean, there's your difference right there. So kudos to Jerin Grant.
I'll give him a little bit of credit, too. And I said this, too, yesterday's episode. I said he's playing well with that second unit. And for whatever reason, he didn't feel comfortable, didn't feel comfortable in the starting role in the position that he was in. Coming off the bench seems like more ideal for Jerin Grant. David Nwaba being the spark coming off the bench and helping the Bulls close games late, I think he's another one that deserves a lot of credit. For a guy that literally bought himself a tryout for $150, David Nwaba bought himself a G League tryout in order to get back into the league. And so he's fought his way through, and he's got a great story too. There's been a bunch of pieces early this week that have been released, one by The Athletic. A couple other Bulls blogs around there have done a really nice job covering his story. So I suggest you go read those stories, because he's an interesting piece. And, there's going to be a lot of competitive teams that are going to like David Nwaba, coming into the summer if he continues to be that spark off the bench. He's a restricted free agent, so that's going to be a move that the Bulls are going to have to look for. And I know it pains you to do this, but I also have to give, I've got to give Garpax credit here for picking up a guy off waivers, to picking up David Nwaba, getting him. It was a good move. I got to give Garpax some credit. For as much flack as we do give them, this was a good move by them.
Yeah, it was. Absolutely. He has continued to impress. He was another big piece of that Bulls win off the bench against Boston. He's strung together a couple of very nice games. And to me, that's, we talked in our show yesterday about which pieces are for sure a part of this rebuild moving forward. And it's LaVine, and it's Dunn, and it's Markkanen. I mean, to me, Nwaba is number 4 on that list of guy that I definitely want to keep around.
I agree. And I think it's spot on. And the list, I feel like you can cut it off at the first 3 that you said, LaVine, Dunn, and Markkanen. Those are your for sure spot guys. But Nwaba could be your 4th, and that could be a guy that, is part of your 8-10 man rotation. And he could be a legitimate contributor on a team that's trying to excel or trying to compete once the Bulls are there. And I think the Bulls could get a good deal. But I'm saying there's going to be a lot of teams out there that are going to be looking for his spark. It'll depend on how much the Bulls are going to want to spend. But to wrap up this Nico situation, I want to drop one more stat on you real fast. In terms of just kind of looking at his offensive production over his 4 seasons and maybe looking at what he might do over the next month before his trade eligibility. So in his rookie season, he had a streak of 10 games where he scored in double figures. What do you think his longest streak since that point, since his rookie season, has been, and how many times do you think he's done
scoring in double figures?
Yeah, in games in a row, consecutively.
My guess would be he's done at least that twice more. A 10-game stretch scoring in double figures. That would be my guess.
So he hasn't. That was his peak. He scored 10 consecutive games in double figures. His next was a 5-game stretch in his 3rd season. And then last season, he did have a 5-game stretch in which he scored. So he's only had 2 other 5-game stretches where he scored in double figures. He's had a lot of 4-game ones, but then it's been followed up by a dud, by a 6-point game or an 8-point game.
I was trying to be nice. I was trying to be nice, assuming at least once or twice in those, those hot March stretches that people talk about, he strung together 10 straight. Because he also didn't he win player of the month 1 year I can't remember if it was rookie or sophomore year when there was a month when he was just on fire. He actually led the NBA in fourth quarter scoring.
Yeah, that was the streak he was on when he had 10 consecutive games. He was, I think, all but two of those games he had scored 20 or more points.
All right, see, it serves me right for second guessing myself. I complain and complain and complain about his inconsistency. Boom, there's the evidence for it right there.
So that's why I'm saying, like, when we look ahead at what he can do, I hope he can find some way to repeat that. So one other stat to kind of drop on you. So I was curious at his peak, Nico's peak, his rookie year, how he was getting to the bucket, how he was scoring so many points, and why he was so exceptional throughout that stretch, those 10, 12 games that he had played the year that he was player of the month, and that was his rookie season. I actually noticed he was getting to the line a ton more than he has over the next three seasons. So in this stretch, Nico was getting the line and shooting an average of 9 free throws a night. And looking at his stats from games that maybe he was, you know, not playing so well, he wasn't scoring, he wasn't being effective, he was inconsistent, he wasn't getting the line at all. He was averaging only about three free throws a night. So I think that can be a hindrance too. And so,
yeah, and Nico did get to the free throw line for six attempts in the game against Boston last night. He was only three of, he only made three of them. He was 3 for 6 from the free throw line. But also to your point, evidence that maybe he's convinced to not only make himself a spot up shooter, because Nico went 3 of 7 from downtown last night and 6 of 7 from inside the 3-point line. He also had a couple of very strong power forward esque moves down on the block, down in the posts as well. Some of which I was like, wow, I don't know if I've really ever seen that from Nico before. So there's a little bit of credit to Nico. It does look like he has tried to implement everything he talked about this offseason as far as expanding his game, adding some muscle, and diversifying his offensive weaponry. So take that with a grain of salt, but we did see a little evidence of that in the win against Boston last night.
So all I'm going to say is, you know, let's take a deep breath and hope for that Nico continues to play on a good pace, and that the Bulls can get some type of value out of him, and that another team that's trying to compete can go to a new situation and the Bulls can get some value out of him.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. And on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
So let's get to our segment, though. This week in Bulls history. So this week in Bulls history, what do you got this week for me, Matt?
All right. My first one, we're going to turn the clock all the way back to December 12, 1987. So on this exact day, 30 years ago. Good Lord. We have a 112-103 Bulls win over the Houston Rockets. And this was a great, I mean, this is a classic. You have Hakeem Olajuwon and Michael Jordan, two of the best in that great late 80s, early 90s stretch of NBA history. Olajuwon, in a losing effort in this one, puts up 31 points, grabs 8 rebounds, leading the Rockets. They also got 20 and 12 from Ralph Sampson. And for the Bulls, Jordan dropped 44, dished out 9 assists, grabbed 3 rebounds, but also check this out, 5 steals and 5 blocks. 44, 9, 5, 5, and 3 for MJ. Charles Oakley chips in with 19, Paxson 14, Scottie Pippen 12 off the bench. And the Bulls and Michael beat the Rockets in a great duel between MJ and Olajuwon.
This day in Bulls history, actually to this day, December 12th, 1997, Michael Jordan scored in double figures for his 788th game, passing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the most consecutive games scoring in double figures. Isn't that nuts? 788 consecutive games of scoring in double figures for Michael Jordan.
Yeah, and he almost added another 100 on top of that, because that streak didn't end until 866. That streak went from March 25th, 1986 to December 27, 2001. Of course, that was his post-second retirement playing with the Washington Wizards. So 866 was Jordan's final tally for that double-digit point scoring streak, which still holds. But get this, LeBron's coming for him. LeBron earlier this season notched his 800th in a row in a game in early November. He is now at 818. He needs 48 more to tie MJ's record and 49 to break it. So he needs 49 more to set the record, and the Cavs have 55 remaining games in this regular season. So if Bron doesn't take a bunch of games off in March to get ready for the playoffs, he could be breaking that MJ record of 866 this very season.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that either. The way LeBron has been playing, and he's playing at the peak of his career, which is crazy to talk about. He's had the best stats so far this season in any one of his seasons in the past, and he's in his 15th year of the NBA. He's playing at that type of level. So, like you said, if he doesn't sit out a bunch of games, you know, whether it's, you know, in February or March to kind of rest up for the playoffs, you might see him break that record this year. That's crazy. I just can't believe it. Think about all the players that struggle to, you know, even get to double figures in a game, and you've got guys going out there at elite levels like this and going for hundreds and hundreds of games consecutively scoring in double figures. So that's another testament to MJ, and also a testament to LeBron too. LeBron's quietly trying to pass all these records books and really, you know, stick it to MJ and MJ stands and saying that, you know, maybe LeBron is the best of all time. Obviously, we'll never say that on this podcast because this is a Chicago Bulls podcast. Michael Jordan will forever be the greatest. And to everybody in the city, he will be forever the greatest.
Yep. I mean, is it too petty for me to say that I hope for by some random mishap LeBron comes short of breaking that record? I don't care if it's petty. I'm going to say it. I hope that LeBron somehow, for some reason, has a game where he scores fewer than 10 and MJ holds on to that record. But at the same time, I mean, that's a cool record. I mean, talking about consistency and longevity and all that. But what I care about is the ring count. And I know some fans think that, you know, oh, rings don't mean everything. And certainly LeBron himself has used that argument before, but whatever. And in the huge debate of whether LeBron could ever pass MJ, I'm 6 for 6 in the finals. Talk to me when LeBron has 6 rings. End of story.
So to finish up here on the show, I want to talk about a player that just recently got put on waivers. He cleared waivers today, and that's Derrick Jones Jr. from the Suns. So the Suns had to make room for Mike James to come back on the roster, and so they had to cut somebody, and they cut Derrick Jones Jr. He went through waivers. It seemed like maybe somebody might pick him up. He cleared waivers, but it's interesting because he's a guy that I feel like would be an interesting pickup for the Bulls, and he's been kind of linked in some random and weird ways. He's only 20 years old. He played in 32 games last year for the Phoenix Suns, and I think he's an interesting and athletic piece, and he's also the guy that won the slam dunk contest last year and had some crazy athletic dunks in that contest too. So in terms of whether or not this would be advantageous for the Bulls, it would. But there are kind of some bumps in the road that you have to think about. So if the Bulls wanted to find a way to get Derrick Jones Jr. on the Bulls roster or even on a two-way contract, they're going to have to do a couple things. First, they're going to have to think about a player that they're going to need to cut. So one of these guys is going to have to go in order to make a roster spot for one of these guys. And that would also mean that there could be a potential where somebody gets an NBA contract and ends up coming back. So in some of these rumors, there is a possibility that he could join the Bulls because him and Antonio Blakeney share the same agent. And so there's word that maybe that these two guys might end up playing in Chicago together. And I think it would be interesting, but that would mean that the Bulls would have to get rid of somebody. So I had this I had trouble trying to think of who the Bulls would be willing to get rid of and be willing to cut in order to put Derrick Jones Jr. on a contract. And that would now mean that Derrick Jones Jr. would have to stay on the NBA roster. So you could do a couple different things. You could sign Antonio Blakeney to an NBA contract, and then you could put Derrick Jones Jr. on that two-way contract. And then, but you would have to cut somebody. That would mean like Campaign, possibly Paul Zipser, somebody else like that. Maybe even people were thinking about Quincy Pondexter, but there's also consequences from all of this to happen. So what do you think about the possibility of maybe the Bulls bringing in Derrick Jones Jr. just at least to give him a look?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I think they should at least consider it because when you talk about his greatest asset as a young 20-year-old NBA player right now with not a whole lot of experience, it's athleticism, right? I mean, you talk about his performance in the dunk contest. Bulls fans should also remember it's not like he can just dunk when he's got an open court and ample time to prep for his dunk. He posterized the Bulls with a nasty dunk just last season, his first season in the NBA. So there's that. And you talk about this Bulls team that constantly preaches, oh, we're going to get younger and more athletic, and then they do ridiculously stupid things like signing, you know, 80-year-old Dwayne Wade and 85-year-old Rajon Rondo. Derrick Jones is young and athletic. Literally, he fits that criteria. And he is a, you know, an interesting prospect at the wing position, where right now the Bulls seem a little unsure of what they have. Paul Zipser has been inconsistent. He's played a little bit better recently, but you know, I'm pretty sure as you move this team forward, you are going to want LaVine playing at the two, not at the three. It's an interesting idea. It's an interesting concept. And also something to think about is that, I mean, his contract is attractive. It's unguaranteed, and he's got 2 years remaining on it. This, the deal he signed with Phoenix last year, 3 years, $3.4 million. I mean, I feel like there are a lot of teams out there that would be interested in giving a guy a chance just because of how team-friendly that contract is.
Well, he cleared waivers, which is crazy. He cleared waivers, so he's an unrestricted free agent. That's why I was thinking that maybe in terms of where he wants to sign, maybe he would sign with a guy like Antonio Blakeney, who they share the same agent with. Maybe there's a connection there.
That's what I was saying. Like, if the Bulls were that interested, they probably would have taken him, right?
I think so too.
Because they had the ability. Like, they were at the top of the waiver list. Like, if they wanted him, they could have taken him. Although, to your point, maybe it's just because they don't like him or are not intrigued enough by him to cut somebody else, and that's why they haven't made a move yet.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about guys that they could possibly cut, and you know, the names out there are also attached to consequences. So obviously you look at like guys like Quincy Pondexter, but the thing with Quincy Pondexter is if you cut him, you don't get the Pelicans' second round pick. So he's got to stay on the roster in order to maintain that second round pick. And I don't know, the Bulls don't value second round picks a lot, so that could be a possibility. But I don't see that likely. I feel like they would want to keep that second round pick, especially because they traded away their one that could potentially be the number 31 overall in the 2018 draft. There's guys like, I don't know, there's questions like guys like Paul Zipser. How much do you value Paul Zipser and what he's done so far this year? Not a whole lot. So there's a couple other guys too. Like, I know they just sent Kay Felder down. They could even possibly look at a potential situation of putting Antonio Blakeney on an NBA deal, freeing up that two-way contract and putting Derrick Jones Jr. on that two-way contract, not only to be able to come up in case there are injuries, but also to send him down and let him play in the G League and see what he does down there. But you also run into a problem too, is now you're going to have to make a roster spot also when Zach LaVine comes back. So in terms of what you're going to do with these bodies, that would be a questionable, and it would be a tough decision in terms of what the Bulls see on their roster and who they see fit to just let go.
I think Bulls fans will hold their breath and hope that the front office, whatever they decide to do about this, doesn't make a boneheaded decision. You talk about giving the front office a little bit of credit for the fact that David Nwaba, a guy that, you know, seemed like he was unwanted after his short stint with the Lakers last year, looks like a piece worth keeping. Give him credit for that if you want to. But, you know, as we get closer to this deadline, and as we get closer to figuring out exactly what this Bulls roster will look like in year two of the rebuild, there's a lot of doubt. There is still an awful lot of doubt about the people running this franchise knowing what to do and making the right decisions, and justifiably so.
Well, that's good about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode for you guys. We'll preview the Jazz game on Wednesday, as well as maybe a special guest as well. So stay tuned for that. We'll see you tomorrow. Hopefully you have a great night.